to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Al. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures, we have another good close on Friday. We're up 73 in the Dow. We're up 4 points in the S&P. We're up three in the NASDAQ. So it looks like the rally is going to continue at least for a little bit here. As I mean, everything is in danger zone if you're an old-timer like me. Margin loans, everything else, and really not much going to get much better from the federal government. They just keep saying no matter what happens, today we're going to buy stuff, even though we know we probably don't need it. That's our story, and we're sticking to it. And I just wonder what the legacy of this Powell guy is going to be 20 years from now. I mean, I hope it isn't as dire as I think. Let's just hope I'm wrong. Isn't that bad, Manny, when you hope you're wrong? Very bad psychologically.
Yes.
Sometimes it's good when you think some guy's coming up and, like, you're pitching, and I figure, oh, this guy's going to get hit, and if he doesn't, you know, then I feel good about it, but you know, then I'm happy I'm wrong there. But it's just kind of one of those things. So, what'd you make of what is the story with the Blackhawks? I mean, what are they firing the team and the beer vendors next, or what?
I don't know. I didn't hear the Colleton news until this morning that he was fired. Was this over the weekend?
No, it was like Friday.
Yeah. So,
Wasn't he brought up from Rockford?
That sounds right.
I think he was too.
Yeah, he was a young guy that they really liked in the organization, and he was promoted, I think, from within. So, yeah, I assume he came up from Rockford.
Can you think of a coach that can deal with this, that could deal with what was happening? And, I mean, I look at the team. You know what I did is I foolishly was watching a Hawk game from wherever. It was either the first cup or the second cup. And I was watching these guys and how good they were. And how good. Well, Duncan Keith's still pretty good. But who was the other guy that got? Had so many surgeries the last 2 years. Was the other guy?
Marian Hossa?
No, well, him too. It was my next. The other defenseman. It was.
Brent Seabrook?
Yeah. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. He's big, strong. Nobody messed with him. I mean, and they had Shaw was playing. They had the other guy. He was the real big, fast guy in the one wing. They ended up getting back and then he wasn't good the second time through. There's like 10 players there of, let's say on a scale of 1 to 10 that were, you know, 7 or higher, and they didn't replace any of those guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're going back a long time too, though. I mean, they won the first cup in 11 years ago, almost 12 years ago. They won the last cup, what, in 2015? Is that right? So that was, you know, the 2015 season, which we're in the 2022 season, so that's 7 years ago. So a lot of those guys are out of hockey now. And you need to replace that level of talent. Salary cap has changed, and they weren't drafting as high, obviously. They had so many bad years in a row where they were picking very high in the draft and built a core of Keith and Seabrook and Taves and Kane and Jalmerson was a big one. And then they were able to sign some key free agents like Hossa They're going to have to almost, it sounds like they're almost tanking again for a few years to try to do that again. And I really like this Kirby Dach guy, and they have a couple young guys.
Well, DeBrincat's pretty good, but he's a little guy.
Yeah, but they're not even close to where they need to be. I mean, obviously.
Well, there's got to be, you look at these other teams, and they've got, actually last year, I watched them, you know, quite a bit, and their first line, can I say a line and a half? First line, maybe two. Belonged out, could play with anybody. And then whenever Keith was out there in defense, you had a pretty solid D. And then you fell off dramatically. The third and fourth lines were just, was like against a college team. I mean, I can't believe it. There's no way, you know, I'm not expert on the vagaries of hockey, but the way the draft works there, there's no way that you can say you're the only thing you're going to do is assign people to the draft. Because you can draft somebody and they go play college for 4 years. I mean, you know, it's not like football where if all of a sudden you trade away your schmucks and you've got, you know, 11 draft picks 1 year, in 2 years you can flip the whole thing upside down. I mean, there's no way that they drafted all those people. I mean they had you know, out of the 18 guys on the team, you know, 15 of them were like I say, a 7 or higher. And now how many guys on the team actually would even play for somebody else right now? I mean, a few rookies are pretty decent, but is there 5 or 6 that even belong on the other team?
I mean, I certainly don't know enough about hockey to say that, but yeah, there clearly seems to be a step down in talent when you watch them play their opponents here in the early going. They're, 2-9-2 through the first, you know, dozen games. So
I mean, they've had games where they've given up 2, 3, and 4 goals in the first, like, 8 minutes or something. Yeah. I mean, it's not even...
But, like I said, you know, again, I don't claim to be a hockey expert. I don't think anyone on the show is. But when you read a lot of the preseason predictors, a lot of write-ups had the Blackhawks as a playoff team this year. And it doesn't look like they're going to be anywhere close to a playoff team unless there's a dramatic turnaround.
Well, they overestimated how much the goalie was going to be worth to him. This Fleury guy, that was a light bulb that went off, like, oh my God, you got this guy. We thought he was retiring. And he's actually been pretty decent. But I mean, I think they totally, I mean, somehow or another, they thought they were going to replace the 32 minutes that Duncan Keith, or 30, he gave you every game, and they haven't done that. I mean, they don't have anybody in a penalty kill as good, they don't have anybody in a power play as good, or a defenseman. You know, obviously he's getting up there, but there's way more to this than just. We don't know. There's no, in baseball, you lose a free agent, you get one of those drafts, right?
Yeah.
In hockey, do you get nothing?
I don't know what the rule is on that. I assume there's some sort of compensation, but I'd have to look it up.
Oh, doesn't seem like there is, because it's not like they got a bunch of guys coming up. Rockford's not any good, are they? Except we get the coaches out of there.
Yeah. Well. They at least kind of know what they're doing, and you can plug them in the short term. I doubt that this guy's going to be a long-term answer.
Well, so how does the weekend go? He must know some of the players, obviously, because he coached them at Rockford. But so they bring the guy up here, but they not only wing the coach out, they wing all his assistants out. So does he even have any assistants? I mean, the first game, what do you do? Just go out there and play, shift lines whenever you feel like it, or what?
Did you watch any of the game last night?
No, I didn't. I didn't either.
We're talking kind of blind here.
Well, I'm sure
they explained all that.
Well, what's his name? Foley was back. So I listened to him before the game. And he was talking about how it's a challenge and blah, blah, blah. I know. And Eddie Olczyk, who I think is terrific. I mean, by the way, he looks great from having that cancer stuff. I mean, he looks just like he used to.
Yeah, he's the best. Which is why he's the national guy, too.
But he was talking about how whenever there's a coach, I mean, as a player, you end up, I mean, you may have proven yourself to the other coach, but as a new guy, so there's always like a buzz in the locker room because you want to, you know, maybe if the other guy lets you only, you know, 3 shifts a night and you want to get 5 if you impress the new guy. So there's always a buzz in hockey, maybe even more than in other sports, that, you know, you want to impress the new guy. And maybe he likes some of the guys from Rockford more than the other guy did. I mean, there's going to be a little bit of a change. But,
it makes sense. I mean, if you had a first, let's say you had a bad first, you know, 6 or 7 games, and you left a certain taste in the mouth of the old coach, and you kind of bury yourself and you lose confidence, and then now a new guy comes in and he's basically going to be holding open auditions, it gives you a revitalization, a fresh start.
Plus, there might be a chance that Jonathan Toews comes around a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
He hasn't done much. I mean, which after a year off, that's not as surprising, but it just is, you know, it's weird. You and I might think, you know, I'd say I could make a stab at baseball more than I could anything else as a coach, but it'd be one thing to say, hey, Chief, you're coaching the Cubs. Oh, by the way, we fired the bench coach and everybody else down the line, and you got to go man third base on top of it. Really?
Yeah.
I'd have to have you come out and man first, right? I mean, what exactly would we do game one? The only people there. You know, we had all those guys helping us. We'd maybe have a fair chance at it, at least not to look too stupid, right?
Yeah. So they didn't keep any of the old regime, huh?
Well, they bounced. I don't know how many coaches you have. They said the 2 assistants also got canned. So I'm sure, you know, I'm sure they kept them. You know, who else they kept them the thing? And they scrubbed the other guy's name off the Stanley Cup, right?
That was the plan.
Yeah, they did. He's been.
You know, he's in all the pictures and videos.
Well, now. Where's get Stalin's guys? You get him out of there.
That's true. for knowing what he did, they still were like hugging him and all kinds of stuff on the stage. When you look at all those pictures, it's kind of, it's just kind of bizarre.
I'm kind of in a lost spot here. I really don't want to read all the details, because you know what, there's so much bad stuff going on in the world. But I just, the idea of that happening on a hockey team to an adult male, I just don't even. Something's weird. I mean, I don't.
It's definitely hard to understand. Just a manipulation of power when you're a young rookie, and you know, he's a prominent sort of member of the coaching staff, and you know, you're trying to get ice time and trying to make it in the NHL. I mean, it's still as weird. There's no doubt. I'm with you, but I can also see the power structure of it all.
Whatever he knows, I had Catholic education all the way up through the ranks, and I hear stories about, you know, what's, you know, a couple of the priests were doing it in Notre Dame, and one of the guys, you know, who was the second in command, he ended up leaving because he had under weird circumstances. I really never saw any of that, you know, and yet other people tell me, oh yeah, I saw that all the time. You know, if he liked some guy on this team, he'd show up for swing practice and watch and that kind of stuff, and I'm going, really? I'm not naive enough to know that if other people saw it, it would obviously happen, but I just don't get, man. There was a guy, I've never told a story before, there was a guy at the Rock, you could go over to the Convocation Center and play ball, but basically it was too far. So one of the nice things about living where we did, we're right next to the Rackney Memorial, which is that's where you would have lived, because that's where we lived. Because you went over and you brought your four or five guys, and you waited for a team to lose, and you wandered out and you played till you won, right, or till you lost, and everybody played, all the football players. You saw everybody on campus there at some point or another. I played against Austin Carr, played against Joe Theismann, you know, but we would go every night, and there was a guy there, this big fat guy. Of course, today everybody's fatter, but it would, like, you know, you went and you got everything. You got the ball. You got your outfit there, because they didn't want any diseases running around campus. So they want to make sure you got everything there, and they washed it in towels. So the guy basically ran the towel room. This kind of weirdo guy. I'm sure he was gay. Fat Eddie, right? So he runs the place, and you know, he went over. I just made sure I always had my shorts on when I went by. I mean, he never bothered me. And it was no big deal. You knew the guy was a little wacky, and if, you know, some guys liked to tease him, you know, and stuff, and he would always act it out, kind of thing, you know, like he was always interested. But I never saw him touch anybody. I never saw anybody do anything, right? And I mean, you knew he was a little different, but he was kind of wacky on top of probably being gay. But you know, again, there's nothing wrong with that. But the idea was, I don't know what you'd do if all of a sudden somebody said, gee, you know, this guy really weirded me out when I was 18, and I'm 70 now, and I'm still, I ruined my whole life. And you sit there and go, really? You know, why didn't you just brush it off and leave the guy alone? I mean, and they're going to sue the place, because it really bothered me. I mean, I never told anybody, but it really bothered me. I named Ted Hesburgh. Well, he's dead. I named, you know, Moose Krause, who was head of the athletic department. Well, he's dead. What exactly do you do with that? I mean, today the guy would not be there, I'm assuming. But it was like, you know, he's Fat Eddie, just leave him alone. He's got a job. What else are you gonna do? I mean, he never ran from behind his cage and touched anybody or anything that I know of. But I mean, now what if somebody now is all wigged out about it? I mean, how do you even do it? Oh, by the way, for $5 million, I'll be okay the rest of my life. I mean, everybody's dead. I know it's still going on, and I know a lot of people are guilty, but there's a lot of them where everybody even involved is sort of, they're not even here to talk about it. What would you do exactly in that case? I mean, and yet there's stuff like that around, right?
I guess. I don't know where you're going with this, but
I'm just saying I don't understand the whole mechanism of whenever money's, as you know, I've been following the money my whole life. Whenever money gets involved, the truth seems to wander. You know, it just seems to wander, right? I've been reading about this guy, the owner of the Phoenix Suns, and they're running around interviewing people. Well, did you ever hear Matt Weber say something nasty about a girl in a bar? You know, I mean, they're essentially people that aren't even coming up and volunteering. they're like interviewing people as to whether the guy is a racist or a misogynist. I'm going to say he's probably not a guy you and I would want to hang out with. A lot of these guys with a lot of dough, you know, think they think they're special. They think what they walk to school. What do you always say? They were born on third and thought they hit a triple. I mean, they're not people probably you and me and the listeners would hang with. But there's a lot of people in this country you and I wouldn't hang with. I mean, it doesn't make them bad. It just means we didn't want to hang with them, right? But there's no doubt. There's maybe no doubt the guys. And what are they going to do, take his team away from him because they went out and initiated conversations? Hey, did you ever hear Matt Weber say anything bad about a black guy? Well, you know, he never used the N-word, but, gee, you know, he was in this bar one time, and a black guy was acting like a knucklehead, and he said something about him being a black guy. Well, what does that mean exactly? I mean, he said something nasty to this lady 25 years ago. Oh, I know all kinds of people like that from the trading floor. Man, what am I going to do? Get them all fired from the job that they're in now? I mean, since when are we demanding perfection out of all other people except ourselves? You know, he's going to lose his team. He's going to do this. We're going to, NBA has got to take action. For what? A 20-year-old interview? I wonder how, in the midst of all the problems we have, all of a sudden these cases just keep coming by, and they just keep getting further and further from the truth. We got rid of the one coach on Oakland. And everybody, why would anybody think that John Gruden's that great of a guy? He kind of came up through that, you know, that coaching group where they've been, those guys, you know, they have their own world. So the guy writes a few emails to somebody which were supposed to be private. Well, all of a sudden they're not private. Well, now we're going beyond that. We're saying, well, look, don't put anything down on paper. Now they're going after this guy who's the coach of Phoenix by running around interviewing people that used to work for him out of the blue. I mean, where is the safety here if somebody wants to get you? Just, I don't know, I was reading that this weekend. I shouldn't have been, I guess. But, hey, I do have a interesting question for you. You're not that much of a stock guy. Did you read the stuff about Elon Musk?
Which stuff?
Where he might have to sell as much as 10% of his holdings because he's got a $15 billion tax bill coming.
Wow.
For you and for a lot of the listeners, I had a client that had a problem with this, and tell you what, it was really ugly for a long time, Eddie. If you get, Matty Weber Inc. or Matty and Jill and the rest of the gang Inc. You probably won't invite me to be a shareholder, but if you're involved in a place and you say I'm not going to take as much money as I deserve or whatever, and the board says okay, we're going to give you stock options and set, okay. You know, I think I'm right on this. I mean, if there's a tax guy, if I'm wrong, just I'm not a tax dude. But if you strike a price on the options, okay, you're going to get to buy, you know, Webby Inc. for $10 a share for 1 million shares, and it's got an end date, say 2025. All of a sudden, it gets to 2025, and Webby Inc. is now trading for 100, and you strike that option, well, you're going to exercise because it's going to expire, right, if you don't. So now you're on the hook for essentially $90, the difference between the strike price and the market price, like that year. All right? Now, that you can probably get that part, right? The weird part is, though, if when you do it, it's $100, and you say, no, I really just like Webby Inc., and it then craps up down to 10, well, now you don't have any money, right? But you still owe the 1 million shares times $90, income tax on that, you know, whatever your rate happens to be. So say it's 30% or whatever. So the weird part is, but if you say, okay, I'll sell it at 10 and I'll take my loss. Remember what I've been talking about? How you only get to deduct 3,000?
Mm-hmm.
That's now capital loss. So you got to pay income, ordinary income on the 90 times 1 million shares. And now the 90 times 1 million shares that you just lost in the market, that's a capital loss, and you only take 3,000 of that off against the 90 you now got to pay against. So
that doesn't cover it.
No. I mean, it's not even close to covering it. So Musk goes out and he has this alleged, you know, the Twitter vote. You've been hearing about this? All the Twitter people are taking a vote as to whether he should sell his stock or not. I don't care what the Twitter people said. If this moron, he's not a moron at all, if this guy does not sell his stock and pay that tax at today's market price, he's out of his mind. If this thing were to crap out, he's got real problems because his option here is he's got. Let me get a little. Where do you see this? He's where is he here? He got 8 million shares. It's a 2012 award. Stock is now trading, even though it's down this morning. Where the hell do I have it? I've got it down $59. It's trading $1,162. Guess what his strike price is?
What is it?
$6.24. So the guy's got 22.8 million shares at what did I just say? What's 1,163 minus six? $1,157 times 22.8 million is his profit on this. Now that's a number.
Yes,
so
it is.
So the day he gets the stock now, I don't even want to do the calculation now. I'll bust my calculator. When he gets it, now that becomes ordinary income for him. If he does not sell 35% of that for his tax bill, he's been to the recreational hooch place. I mean, there's no way on earth anybody would take that risk. Unless you happen to have, you know, $3 or $4 or $5 billion in capital losses somewhere else you can match stuff up against, but I doubt very seriously if he does, right?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be the one thing.
Yeah, well, how would he have that? I mean, how would anybody have that?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other companies involved in it went bust or anything, is there? I doubt it.
No. Is there any way you can cook the books at Tesla to show more of a loss than they're already taking?
Doesn't matter. It's where the share price is when he gets the award.
Okay.
When he strikes the deal. Now, I suppose they could push it out. Yeah, you know, I'm not so sure you can do that. But, you know, maybe the board could say, it goes from 2012, so obviously it looks like it was a 10-year deal, right? They could. I don't know if they can extend it. I shouldn't even say that. But maybe the only way I can think is for the board to change the deal. But right now they're going to say, Matty, here you go, buddy. Here's 22.8 million shares at 6.25. And they're going to say you owe, you know, 1157 times 22.8. I mean, if the thing drops $100 today, you're screwed.
Right. So for him proposing this poll on Twitter, is he just doing that to?
Just for publicity, for yucks. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The only thing he could do, I mean, and I don't know who could possibly. I mean, he could go buy. I mean, I might recommend. You've been real hard to do this on an exchange. So what's 22.8 million divided by 100 is what 228,000. You have to buy 228,000 put options. So if he went out, you know, but those are going to cost you a bunch at Tesla.
Yeah.
And you'd have to have some kind of an over-the-counter deal with somebody. I mean, he could do it on an exchange. We could do it for him.
What would those cost you at Tesla? For Tesla?
Let me see if I can get the... That's what I'm saying. They're going to cost a lot. Let me throw Tesla up here. I won't get a market price, but I can get where they were, and I'll see how far out they go. Let's say we went out to March... even if he bought the March 860s, which are $300 away, they're $35.
$35 times 228,000.
Yeah, that's a number. That's a real number. Let me get closer.
That'd be start. $8 million.
Yeah, let me get a closer number. The 1160s are $148. Times 228,000, that's a lot. Just saying. It's $30 million.
Yeah, 33.7 million bucks. I mean, is that chump change to him, or is that a lot?
It's
a lot to me.
It's a lot. Well, I mean, that's then you can put yourself out a while and hope if you think the stock's going up. But it's had such a run, I'm not so sure. This is a bad spot to sell some anyway. You know,
yeah.
I'm not going to give it market advice on Tesla, but it's had an amazing run. I mean, it's up. The thing has gained. What did who called us the other day? Was it Mike? And said something about, you know, Mike. Hopefully, will be back today. The thing's up $450 billion in market cap in 15 weeks or something. It's more than any other stock ever in the history of New York Stock Exchange. So to just say it's going to keep going up from here, I mean, you could buy the puts there and then you know. And do that, but so then if the thing craps out, at least you've got capital gain on the puts that you could you can match up. Then you'd have some your ordinary income would go down, and you'd switch over to capital gain, right? So if the thing were to drop, well, the strike price would be $11.60, so no matter what happens, you can sell it there about until March. Right? So if you exercise the puts and deliver the stock, then you can, you're just out. Right? The only thing it cost you was the put premium, only thing. But the people on TV are kicking this around. I mean, I don't understand why anybody, the problem comes is if you just take the stock and it goes down and you, one becomes capital loss. But do you know the way around it? What my clients did, they got the IRS a long time ago, it's past the statute of limitation. What everybody's talking about in this tax thing with the, you know, they want the rich people to essentially mark themselves to market on their stock, right, on their wealth, and pay tax on the wealth. Ever since the Tax Act of 84, anybody who's a professional in the business, well, everything you make in the business is ordinary income, right? So if right now my trading and what I do for my clients, it's all in the customer range. But if I were to get, and I don't really desire to do this, but if five people said, hey, we don't want to be in the customer range anymore, let's put together a hedge fund or any kind of just a partnership, and they want me to manage it or you and me to manage it or whatever, and say we want to become a professional, we would start, like we could start a broker dealer, or we could just become an exchange member, okay, which now all of a sudden we're professionals, we're market makers. And or a hedge fund of some kind where we become a joint back office, and I can explain all this someday, but every one of them is a long explanation. But we would now become a professional, Maddie. So if we made, you know, $50 million our first year, no, that'd be a good year. We owe tax on the $50 million. It's essentially your equity at the beginning of the year taken away from your equity at the end of the year minus expenses, that's your income, right? So it doesn't matter. Before 84, people could selectively close trades like a retailer can, but you could, in other words, we could do that. So the idea that people are being marked to market is not unheard of. Even though you'll hear the bumps on TV go, oh man, you know, if there's this wealth tax, you know, it's going to bury everybody. Well, let's put it this way. A lot of people in the world, but so the people that I had that did the same thing that Musk is maybe toying with doing, they ended up, the stock was Oracle. And the guy had tremendous amounts of, Oracle at like $10 a share, and the stock's trading 60. So he owed tax on like 50, and then the stock collapses down to like 8. Right? So now he's got a problem. But he was able to prove to the IRS, and I think you can still take this election or prove it, that because he had come to a whole bunch of seminars, that's where we met him. It wasn't our seminars, it was some other people, that he had essentially retired to become a trader, that was now his profession. And since it was his profession, that he was a professional trader and he should be marked to market, and that became ordinary income instead of, or the losses he took on it were now ordinary losses, not capital losses. And he was able to pull that off. So you can actually take it, I don't know how to do it, it's between you and your accountant, and not just every accountant even knows the hell I'm talking about, but the guys that are in the securities industry. If you wanted to retire 5 years from now, say you got a bunch of dough and your wife ever let you do it, which I don't know if she would, if you said, I'm just going to trade at home and that's my job, you can make the election that everything you make is ordinary income and lose. Now, I'm not sure if you ever come back from that or whatever, but it gets pretty technical. But obviously, I don't think Musk is in that. You know, I don't know how much other stock and stuff he trades, but right. I doubt very seriously that he's made that election to where this is ordinary income to him. If anybody were to look. Anyway, does this get complicated enough, Manny?
Very, but interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? I mean, as an individual, you can do that. I mean, a lot of people, that's all they do is trade. I mean, you could...
Absolutely.
I'm going to say, if you are... if you decide you're going to, you know, mortgage your house and you're retired, I know some people have done this, and you're going to start trading, I'm not so sure that if your first trade is going to be, you know, $100,000 worth of Bitcoin or something, and you go ahead and lose it, I think you better figure out a way to make that election, boy, because I don't think you want $3,000, you know, a year for the rest of your life, especially if you're 70. I don't think that's going to cut it, do you? Just
no.
Saying. S&P Futures up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 7. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 350. NASDAQ Futures up 4.25. The Dow Futures up 64. Individual stocks, we've got Caterpillar up 872. They don't have any earnings or anything, but obviously some good news coming out there. That's what's driving the Dow here. Pretty much everything else is not much. Boeing up $2. Nothing really down very much. Merck down $1.15. Salesforce down $1.25, so nothing crazy. Disney up 239. That's why we're up some in the futures, because the individual stocks are up. The DAX down 27.2%. FTSE down 33 cents. I'm going to call that one flat. FTSE up 15. That's 0.2%. So very quiet over in, over in Asia. Nikkei down 104.3%. Shanghai up 7.2%. These guys were down on Friday, I believe. Hang Seng down 106 to 0.4. Hang Seng is still reeling a little bit about, you get a big shot of one of these companies that are having all kinds of issues with was Evergrande, and then it was like the second highest one. I think they're supposed to be making a payment either last Friday or this week, and all of a sudden they disappear from the news, man. They flash on for a week, somebody writes an article about them, and then they're like gone. It's really hard to keep track of where they actually did make payments or not. I don't know if that's intentional or just more stuff people want to talk about. 10-year, 1.48. The Bund, these guys come out and they say they're going to taper, and it was such a crock of crap that the bonds are actually up, not down, which is a little bizarre. Bund, minus 0.25. These guys were minus 0.08 a couple of weeks ago. So much for taper over there. Japan, positive 0.05. They got up to positive 0.110. So whatever's going on, the bonds are going absolutely the wrong way, which makes you think that people are doing exactly opposite of what they're telling us they're doing, which would not surprise me given the characters we have. Dow on Friday up 203, S&P up 17, NASDAQ up 31. Oil up 49 cents, 81.76. Brent up 49 cents, 83.23. Natural gas up 2 cents, 5.54. And we've got gold up $1.39, 18.18. So it's pretty reasonably above this 1800 number. We got silver up 16 cents, 24.32. Copper up a penny, 8.35. And we've got crypto up 3,400. Wow, 65,998. That's as high as we've seen in like a really long time, right, Manny? What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We already have a couple of issues here on a Monday morning to the south of us. First, on the Stevenson outbound side just before Pulaski, there's a significant crash blocking the two left lanes. That's right at exit 287 there before Pulaski Road, and this is building traffic on the outbound side on I-55, so keep that in mind if you're heading out in that direction, but that just happened a little bit ago. And then on the Bishop Ford inbound side, we have a crash blocking the right lane. This is just before Stony Island on the inbound side of I-94 Bishop Ford, and that is causing delays as well. So we have some stop-and-go traffic on both the Bishop Ford and on the Stevenson due to those crashes. Dan Ryan itself, once you get past that, is looking pretty good in both directions. No issues on I-57. Same for Lakeshore Drive. We do have traffic building on the Eisenhower and also on the Kennedy, but the Edens looks good. No accidents to report. Off the expressways, there's one crash. It's way northwest. Route 25 at Bartlett Road, there is an accident. But everything else, all quiet out there. Weather today, another beautiful fall day. Sunshine, a high of 64. Right now it's crystal clear and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 61. In sports, the Bears will play in Monday Night Football later on tonight. They're in Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. Bears are 3-5, right near the halfway point of the season. The Steelers are 4-3. Kickoff is scheduled for 7:15 p.m. Central Time. That game is on ESPN, but I believe it's also carried locally on, I think, Channel 9. Either Channel 9 or Channel 7. So you'll be able to watch that one. Might be Channel 7.
You think 7. Channel 7 or the channel that, whatever, that ABC would give that over to Channel 9 tonight? I doubt it.
I think it's Channel 7, yeah, not Channel 9. Arizona Cardinals were in action without their starting quarterback, Kyler Murray, and without their stud wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins, went on the road and still beat the tar out of San Francisco. No one saw that coming. They beat up on the 49ers with a bunch of backups. 31-17. The Cardinals are rolling. They're 8-1 on the year. Best record in the NFL.
Did San Francisco, did they lose to the Bears?
No, they beat the Bears last week. Yeah. Bears should have won that game. Yeah. They blew it. Sunday Night Football last night, it was the Titans upsetting the Rams in Los Angeles 28-16.
In hockey, looked like an upset. They looked like a way better team.
Yeah, they were 7-point dogs without Derrick Henry. The Blackhawks have an interim head coach, Derek King, promoted up from Rockford after they fired Jeremy Colleton over the weekend. And Blackhawks win in Derek King's coaching debut, beating the Predators in overtime 2-1 last night. Bulls were off. They're in action tonight, so you might want to DVR that one if you're watching the Bears game. It should be a good one. The Nets come to town, Brooklyn Nets. It'll be Bulls versus Nets, 7 p.m. tip-off from the United Center. Chief.
Is there a worse team in football than the Bears?
Well, the Bears are 3-5, so yes, there's a lot of teams that have a worse record than them.
Now, well, do they get to play Detroit?
Is there, the Bears have they played Detroit yet?
Yeah, they beat them at all.
They beat them once, okay, so they play them one more time.
Thanksgiving, there's like, counting tonight, I think there's 5 more national TV games with the Bears.
Yeah.
What possessed them to do that?
Big market. That's it. That's all it is.
God. How bad are they going to be tonight?
Probably not very good, although I don't think the Steelers are that good either, but I don't see any reason why the Bears are going to win, so I could see this being
well,
a good game.
You've been listening. I listened to John, how are you? I'm not ignoring you.
That's okay, Tom. Good morning.
Morning. The you listen to, you know, obviously they're on the same channel as I listen to for the traffic all the time. These guys, all they talk about now is the has this become a one-person sport? All they talk about is the this quarterback developing every week, which, by the way, he is, and I like watching him, and I hope they don't kill the guy. But why don't they talk about the fact they've only got 3 or 4 draft picks again next year, and they need 20 people? I mean, the team is horrible.
Yes, I mean, some people do talk about that, but there's no doubt that you have an aging defense that is not getting any younger, and then you have an offensive line that's been very inconsistent, and not a lot of weapons for the quarterback, even though you can't protect him anyway. So, I mean, getting the quarterback, I do think, is the hard part, and if Fields pans out, then they can check that box, and they can fill in nicely around him over the next year. But they don't have a lot of draft capital because they've traded a lot of picks for veteran players, and the veteran players have been okay, but it's not like they've been great. You're 3-5.
But, I mean, the Packers, I mean, they've been a pretty solid team now for really, what, 2 decades?
Yeah, because they've had a Hall of Fame quarterback for like 30 straight years.
Well, okay, but I get that. But they've also used that to have to main, so they didn't have to waste draft picks on quarterbacks. They used that to keep all the rest of their draft picks and have a lot of depth on the team.
Well, that's nice when you can do that. But I mean, the Bears are looking for that quarterback so they can do the same thing. And they mortgaged a lot for Trubisky, and he didn't pan out, and now they've mortgaged a lot for Fields.
They did for the guy from Denver, too.
And we'll see. And then, yeah, before that, before this regime...
And Rick Meyer, and you name it.
You're going across decades now, but still, yes. I mean, they've been looking for quarterbacks for a long time.
I wish it was decades.
It is decades.
It's, well, I'm saying...
Rick Meyer was almost 30 years ago.
If you go... When was... But I mean, if you go back to... Who was the little lefty guy? Before Grossman.
Cade McNown?
Go back to
that
Cade.
Was in the 90s, too. That was like 25 years
ago. But I'm saying the last 25 years, they've given up like 10 number one draft picks for quarterbacks.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan Pace was like 13 when this was happening.
But they gave up how many for Khalil Mack? And how many... They do it for everybody.
There's no doubt that they... This current regime doesn't seem to value draft picks as much as some other organizations.
They disdain the draft. How's
although the Rams trade more draft picks than the Bears, and the Rams are good.
See, now when I do stuff with John Flanagan on the line, he's Mr. Wordsmith. They disdain the draft. How's that, John?
Yes, I like it.
I don't know if that means he likes it or he thinks I'm nuts.
I disdain the draft for military.
Yeah. I disdain. Well, anyway, I'm saying
that's one of the hazards of football. It's the time. I mean, the emphasis or overemphasis on a single player, and it kind of distorts the sport. I mean, it's always been that way, and I'm not no reason to particularly beat up on football today, but it's different in other sports, and I think it kind of accentuates one of the issues with football's future and its popularity. It's too much one person kind of stuff, celebrity stuff, and I don't know. I think most people who like team sports don't get a whole lot out of football anymore, really.
Well, I mean, you take Aaron Rodgers off the Packers, and the Packers, I mean, if he'd have played yesterday, I think they probably would have won, but I mean, the team is still capable of doing something. Right, I mean, the year Michael Jordan didn't play for the Bulls.
Right,
they scored 7 points yesterday. Yeah. I mean, they didn't do much.
But I'm saying they have a defense. But
their defense played great.
Right, so my question is, how are the Bears going to get the 20 people now they need? Because how many years out are you? Well, you got your 3 interior linemen that they're all young, Whitehead and the other guy and the kid from the Notre Dame. So those guys should be there for a decade, right, or 8 years. You need 2 tackles, which are pretty hard to find. You need a couple of receivers.
They drafted one, but he hasn't played yet.
Well, how many receivers have they wasted number of draft picks? Half those guys don't even play.
Yeah.
But now they've got, they're blessed with 3 good backs, right? They probably have 2 good tight ends. This kid Mooney looks like he's pretty decent. But they need another receiver. On defense, they're going to have to replace everybody. I mean, they're all old. Who's the linebacker that comes and goes? He's hurt all the time now. He's always hurt. The guy was real good. What the hell's his name?
Khalil Mack?
No, the guy in the middle. Well, Khalil Mack, he's becoming a net 16-game-a-year guy.
Yeah.
Who's the guy in the middle that's been old for like a few years when he plays there?
Oh, Trevathan.
Yeah, no, he's, you know, he's...
I mean, he's basically washed up at this point.
Yeah, okay, and then so the defensive line, there's a couple of guys there. That one kid, I think he's real good at Tongas guy.
Yeah, they have some guys that rotate in. They can't seem to keep Hicks healthy. And then when he comes back, Mack and Quinn are out. They've very rarely had all those guys at once. With Goldman and Hicks inside and Mack and Quinn outside, when they have, they've actually gotten some pressure on the quarterback, which is, you know, what they're paid to do. And but they, for whatever reason, they can't keep those guys on the field. Roquan Smith is a cornerstone middle linebacker, and he's been great. But the, their defensive backs haven't been very good either.
Has the kid from Notre Dame that Dallas kind of weirdly cut, is he still starting for the Pack? The other Smith.
He might be.
What was the story with that? The guy was like all pro last year. They just cut him.
Probably money.
Yeah, maybe. What? Well, you know what the what problem with guys like, how can I do this, Jan, without causing trouble? Guys like Hicks, I think the problem with that guy is that he's a big, huge guy, and he gets, you know, I mean, this isn't a pie eating contest. This is a football game, but he doesn't play like a big, huge guy and stay where he is. He runs after people downfield. He does all kinds of stuff that somebody would do if they're 220 pounds and not 320. And I think that's why he gets hurt. I mean, but he is really a player, that kid, I think. Don't you? I mean, I think Hicks is one of the best players around.
Yeah.
When he's healthy. But look how much more agile and in shape Luke Donald is than Hicks. I mean, he's built like a linebacker.
You're talking about Aaron Donald?
Yeah, the guy in the Rams.
The guy in the Rams?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's like the best player in the NFL.
But I'm saying, he can chase people down the whole game, and he's not 40 pounds overweight. Just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we have our whole thing about global warming and everybody's bitching everybody to not have a campfire and stuff, did you check the thing I sent you last night, Jan, or Matt?
I did, about coal consumption
in
Asia Pacific.
You having to check this out, Manny? You can pull it up now. It's stunning how much coal that they're using overseas. I mean, and we're closing our coal plants here, and we're exporting coal to someplace else. When our plants are cleaner than their plants. You know, I'm not saying we shouldn't do that, but, you know who is the number one country in terms of coal, research and development, in the world, Jan? You probably know this, Matty. I don't know if you will. And the reason
coal
why?
Coal research and development?
Yeah.
Probably U.S.?
No, it's actually South Africa. Because during the apartheid, wasn't there an oil embargo on those guys for like 30 years or something?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I still think there's some way, somehow, that we can burn coal and do it cleanly. I mean, the plants here in Chicago, the old plants that they all tore down, the ones in Pilsen and the one in the west side, the one by the border, I think to bring those up to current standards was, you know, like a real lot of dough, so it probably wasn't worth it, but... Is it, if you built a brand new coal plant with all the latest stuff on there, is it impossible to make one of those things clean, Jan?
No. I think the technology is there, or certainly the ability to do it is theoretically there, but it takes, you know, a tremendous amount of planning and spending of money to get it right. But I think that's always been an option. And certainly, I mean, I think that the technology that I barely can talk about in the last 50 years or so has made coal a much more attractive energy source than it ever was before.
Well, there's
no interest in cleaning it up or, you know, capturing the runoff or the effluent from it and not doing anything with it. But it is possible to make it substantially cleaner.
Well, wasn't there, Manny, when we first started the show, we talked about it. It wasn't when we first started. It was, I'm going to say, halfway through our tenure. Wasn't there money in the federal budget for some experimental coal plant in southern Illinois or central Illinois where they were going to...
I can't remember the name of the town, but yes, there was.
Weren't they going to bury the carbon dioxide underground or something?
Yeah.
It was some big experiment where all the latest technologies, they were going to build a... Matt, you remember this. They were going to build a smaller coal plant just to see if you did everything the way it was supposed to be done, if you could actually use it as a clean fuel. And then all of a sudden, didn't they buy all the property, Jan? But then they never broke ground or something weird. I mean,
it never went anywhere. I don't think they ever did break ground.
I'll try to do some
research on this for maybe.
I think they had the location. I think they hired people. I think they bought the property. I think it was, you know, if the road was a mile long, they were three quarters of the way down. I think at some point. Did they just bail on the money, or did the state not come up with their share, or what? It was some story to it.
It's probably the latter, I would
guess. Well, I mean, but here are these charts. If anybody, here's an article by Yeah, I'll tell you what, these people. There's some really good writers here at CNBC. They'll come once in a while, and I never see them on TV. Where this young lady's name is Yen Ni Lee. Okay? Anyway, it's got all kinds of charts here. All kinds. There's charts here about the people in the East, in the Asia Pacific region. 57% of their stuff is still coming from coal. You know what I'm surprised here, John, in this chart is how much comes from oil. I would not have guessed it.
Yeah, quite more than I would have thought, too, looking at those bar graphs.
Yeah. Well, just for people who aren't looking at it, I'll be real quick here. The Asia-Pacific, it looks like over half comes from coal, maybe another 25% from oil, maybe 10% from natural gas, and like 10% other, right? Africa's looks like 30-some percent coal, almost 40% oil and some natural gas than other. Do you, Maddie, who are the Commonwealth of Independent States? I did not know this.
Commonwealth
yeah,
of
that
Independent
was a new
States.
Label for me too. Yeah. Azerbaijan and the former Soviet states.
Armenia.
Caucasus region.
Belarus.
Yeah, Belarus.
Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, all these places. Anyway, they're
Dr. J's homeland.
Yeah, they're the Commonwealth of Independent. You know what's not in here is, where was, what's her name from? AV, she's from,
Ukraine.
Ukraine, what are they in? They're Europe now, I guess, huh? Or no, are they Europe or Asia, Ukraine? Oh boy, if she was here,
they're more European, I guess. They abut Europe. So
I always consider them Eastern European.
Well, yeah, I did too. Well, the Middle East now, Middle East is like, it looks like, what, 2 or 3% coal, probably 40% oil, looks like 50% natural gas, then a little bit other. Now, Europe is still pretty good, and Central Europe has still got a lot of nukes, right? Doesn't France have a lot of nukes? And now North America, what are we looking like, Jen? 25, maybe 15% coal? Looks like 40% oil. I was stunned we got that much oil going here that we're burning. It looks like 30% natural gas and maybe 25% other, which has to be mostly nukes, right? Well, I guess we got some wind and solar. The Midwest, the Commonwealth Edison in the Allegheny area in the east, there aren't very many. There's no nukes. Are there any nukes west of the Mississippi? I don't know if there are.
There's some. Well, if there's some in the North Pacific Northwest, or am I dreaming?
I'm not sure.
Down to Washington.
Anyway, but that's the other graph here is you look by individual countries. China's got to be they're 57% coal. India's 55%. Indonesia's 43%, Philippines are 40%, Taiwan 34%, Australia 30%, Malaysia 38%, and you get down to Singapore is 1%. Thailand and Hong Kong are 14% and 15%. So Hong Kong must have, if they're 15%, what do they got? Two plants probably, two or three. But India's got, what, did we talk about it last week, Manny? They got 175 coal plants or 180? That's a lot. China must have, God knows how many.
The thing, Tom, that gets me about this whole climate morass now is that, you know, the emphasis on making, you know, fossil fuels not the source of energy for automobiles, transportation, whatever, and turning to electricity, that's fine. You know, I'm a fan of electronic vehicles. My brother has a hybrid and, you know, charges it regularly and does the whole routine and saves money on gas and all that, but the thing that nobody seems to want to think about is, well, where do you power the electricity to charge up these batteries? Where is that going to come from? You can suppress the emission of fossil fuel burning, but until you figure out a way to get electricity in greater quantities to people who are going to be driving these electric cars, where is that going to come from? If you take coal out of the equation, you're nowhere. I'm sorry, you're just nowhere.
You're nowhere.
You have to consider some place for it, some role for it, and of course, like you said, make it better, make it cleaner. But to think that it can be extinguished as an energy source and that at the same time ramp up our consumption for electricity is total insanity.
Well, it is. I mean,
Natachi writes in on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks and Jocks. He says, has the woke mob prevented Chief from lighting his many campfires? Next thing you know, he won't be able to fire up the coal stove in his house. He also included an article that says clean coal failed all on its own. Government paid its share, but it just didn't work.
Yeah, I think he's probably right. I mean, I don't. So thanks for him for writing in. I don't remember who was supposed to contribute what to that place in Illinois. but it was, I know they were pretty far down the road, and the idea was to push the carbon dioxide underground, right, John? I think it was the original, the whole story.
And I'm sure there were competing interests at the time for whatever money was there to be spread around, and other, you know, wings of the energy industry weren't too interested in seeing coal get any preferential treatment. So who knows what went into that, you know, failure. So
I know Natachi's been a loyal listener for a long time, and, by the way, I love reading his stuff because he always, you know, he's informative. But he also knows me enough to know that I'm not criticizing anything here. What I'm doing is just asking the question. I mean, before we plug the car in and I get rid of the Suburban, where's that power coming from? I can't be blind and say because it comes out of the cord in my garage that somehow it's okay and gas is not okay. Because we have, I'm going to say, morons out there to think that way. I'm going to ask you, there's no question in my mind that if I lived in the burbs or far burbs and had, you know, 3 acres or some crap, and I had 3 cars, which I don't, would I get some kind of an electric vehicle for buzzing around town if town's right near me? And would I put a, you know, one of those nice little, not necessarily a, would I have some sort of a solar collector and maybe even a little windmill? I like the ones that look more like a globe than the ones that look like it came from Holland, the globe ones. You know, would I plug that thing in with that, you know, with some kind of a deal where I get some DC current going right into the car? Would that make sense for me? The answer is absolutely yes. But I'm not, and I use the term, I'm not stupid enough to know that if I plug my thing into the city, and I know that or not so much the city here because we use nukes and stuff, but if I plug my electric car in China, and these idiots are using 60%, well, it looks to me like it's about 75% coal and oil, and they're doing this 40 miles away and running it over wires to my garage, I'm way better off in a modern car just burning the gas than I am doing that. I mean, there's no
Absolutely.
Doubt in my mind
Absolutely.
That I am. So it's a question of where you're getting it from. Yes, if I had a little windmill on the thing, and if, you know, if I had a family, and every time somebody in a family ran to the store and back, they used the electric car out of the little windmill in the garage, would we be A, saving money, and B, possibly saving the world? I'm right with you. But if it's coming from a coal plant 50 miles away, or an oil plant, give me a break. Let me leave my car alone and shut the bleep up, right? I mean, what, right?
Yeah. That's the problem, Tom. The whole debate focuses on narrow ends of creating villains in some kind of, you know, Dungeons and Dragons episode where, you know, the people who burn fuel with these gas-guzzling cars are the problem. We have to take those cars away and make them fueled by some other source. Well, you know, in a game situation, that would be okay, but when you're actually talking about where these things are going to be sourced from, that doesn't change anything. It ups the ante into, you know, an area that nobody seems to want to talk about, these climate debates. Well, then we should be building coal plants up the wazoo to plan for this.
Well, yeah. I mean, the one time that I, Matt, you remember this because I was railing about it. Of course, if you remember all my rails, you'd go nuts. But when I went down to Tucson, I picked up, by the way, that's the dumbest thing I ever did, Jen, is selling that red pickup to Scummy for $6,000. Scummy, SCM, Scotch Ram. His acronym was SCM. Oh, do you think the guy's going to be scummy all the rest of his life? Remember, they never knew him, right? Because everybody picked up the acronym from your nickname came from your acronym, right? So he was SCM, so he was scummy. Anyway, his son needed a pickup truck, and I had two, so I sold him one. I think I'm going to say if I still had that thing, if I just parked it in the garage, it'd be worth like $15,000 today. It'd be like double or triple. I mean, that's how much the prices have gone up on all this stuff. But anyway, I drive this thing back, and I'm going along, is it I-40, Manny, I think? Yeah, it's the old Route 66 in northern Arizona, New Mexico. John, you're running right next to essentially the Santa Fe tracks, right? Or should we say the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe.
Yep.
And you see train after train, and they all got these diesel locomotives. By the way, diesel locomotives are pretty darn efficient. They're like, what, 50 times more efficient than a truck or a car? I mean, it's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredibly. But I'm sitting there. And it's got to be 98 degrees if it's a degree. Relentless winds. And I'm thinking for this 400 miles of out in the middle of nowhere trains, why we don't have 50 electric locomotives and 15 windmills out here and 20 solar collectors, that for that 400 miles of track, we pull the electric vehicle, the electric locomotives over and throw the electric ones on like they used to have on the East Coast and pull these things by electric through this 400 miles of hot, steamy desert. We're out of our mind. I mean, the big guy upstairs is giving us every chance in the world. He's telling you, build a windmill right here, you idiots. Put solar collector right here, and we don't have any. You know, so just what I was saying, where in some areas it doesn't pay, other areas, how do we not have renewable energy pulling that train out there? When there's nothing, but the renewable energy is ready to kill you if you got out of a car, right?
Right. Well, even Amtrak, you know, you can't bring a diesel locomotive into Penn Station or Grand Central. And they were designed.
They haven't been for 50 or 100 years.
So, you know, if everything switches over to electric, it's minimal interference in my experience traveling Amtrak. You don't really notice. There's a slight delay while they swap out the locomotives, and then you were hauled in by an electric one. But they knew, you know, in 1900 they'd have to do this because you couldn't run diesels in tunnels the length of, you know, which you had in New York and not kill everybody on the train. So,
well, you can, but you know, you need a massive
big blowers. Yeah.
Yeah, you need huge blowers. Did you ever read the book on? I'll ask Mary this. I'll just the book on the building of the Eisenhower, not the Eisenhower. The what's the tunnel? The railroad tunnel right there, named after the guy. Oh crap. Maybe see if you can look that up, because I got the book at home. There's a huge railroad tunnel that goes right through the Moffett Tunnel. Moffett was the guy that he designed it and built it, and it's the railroad tunnel. You could
in Colorado.
Yeah, there's five Western railroads, and one of the things they could never figure out how to do was never built a tunnel basically through the Continental Divide west of Denver. There was a train that goes from Denver to Steamboat, and I think it goes one town past that to a coal plant. It was supposed to go, that was going to be the way through the mountains, and they sort of gave up. It made it to past Steamboat, and then they just stopped. Well, then they built the Moffett Tunnel, I'm going to say 1910 or so, 1915. They started at both ends, and this is before computers. And when they met in the middle, they were, what, an eighth inch off or something, Jed?
Yeah, I think I've ridden that train, Tom.
It's a, well, the tunnel, When the train goes into the tunnel, their doors close behind it, right?
Yeah.
And then they pull, there's massive blowers to blow air through the place, so you can actually use, you know, a regular locomotive. They used to use steam or coal in there. But you know what coal, what the coal clinkers do? They're so full of sulfuric acid. There's so much pollution and untreated coal. They used to have to replace the rails like every few years because the acidity would cause the rails to corrode. How would you like that, man? You drive through some tunnel at 50 miles an hour and corroded rails. Ugh. But anyway, there's massive blowers in there. But yeah, the thought that those guys made it from both ends to the middle and they were like, you know, almost dead on before you had computers is pretty spectacular. And it would just you know, guys on sheets of paper, multiplication and dividing. It's, anyway, but I think there's opportunity in all this stuff, Jen. I mean, we can, I think if we put our heads together in this country instead of, you know, arguing your neighbor tomorrow to, stop cooking outside, if we just said, okay, in 10 years, this is where we're going to come to. We're going to find the areas that are the easiest to do this in. And every year just knock off 3 or 4%. I think we could do that in a second, don't you? Couldn't you?
We absolutely could. And one of the problems is in all of the planning that you hear, it's got to be this or that. We have to have, you know, no carbon emissions by a certain date. No vehicle on the road can be doing this. And in a imaginary world, of course, you know, you set laudable goals like that, but to turn them into, you know, it's got to be this way or there's no other way, makes a joke out of the whole enterprise. It turns it into some kind of, you know, we got to get to this point no matter what, and in the meantime, you're going to completely screw up the consumption patterns for energy everywhere else to achieve this one possibly good thing, but not if you are just upping the consumption of, you know, the Earth's resources at the other end of it to get to this objective you set for yourself for no particular reason as part of any grand strategy. So it's just like, you know, looking at things in the narrowest possible way. That's not the way to make long-term plans.
Well, I think you always have to unfortunately, you always have to follow the money. I mean, I'm watching this this whole COVID fiasco. And to me, it's all about the money. I mean, the guys that are making money on these tests, they're going to be giving people tests 30 years from now for God knows what reason, because they've got somebody's ear, right? I mean, it's very bizarre to me. And I don't think I've ever seen the people that are selling this stuff to everybody having a bigger piece of policy than they have now. I mean, this Pfizer, the guy should be in the Oval Office, for God's sake, right?
Or somewhere else.
Or somewhere, I mean, yeah. But, just strange stuff. But anyway, were you part of that discussion with Elon Musk and the money?
Yeah.
Now,
you have to educate me on a few things, Tom. If he hadn't collateralized his options, and I've got to pay the loans on these things, and he just let the options expire, isn't it kind of a, you know?
Wait a minute.
There's no consequence, or?
Well, what manner of moron would let an option expire when the option gives you a share of stock at $6, it's trading $1,160? Why would anybody do that?
Well, I mean, but this was his comp. If he doesn't exercise the option, is that a loss then for him for that? For
no,
his
he doesn't
break?
Exercise. But boy, it's a good Lord. Why wouldn't he? I mean, the company has to go out and buy, has to give him this stock. Well, first of all, could there be a dilution issue? Now you drove me down a road here I didn't necessarily want to go, because it's even more complicated. But
you don't have to go there.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. People hear this stuff all the time, and they never actually hear the detail to it. If you look at Microsoft, and I haven't checked their balance sheet out in 10 years, but been really going through it, but for a long period of time, Microsoft gave as part of compensation packages, gave shares to employees. As a matter of fact, what reunion was it? Must have been like our 20th, John. Daryl and I, we met a couple of ladies, you know, just at the party they used to have on the quad. Met a couple of ladies, and I remember it because it's very rare for me. At the time I was 6'4", where one of the ladies was 6'2", and the other one was 6'4". It's very rare for me to look eyeball to eyeball with ladies. And of course, Daryl's what? 5'10". So he's dancing with the one who was 6'4". It was pretty humorous that he's a horrible dancer. Anyway, but the two ladies, one of them worked for Microsoft, and she was, I think she was the class of, 94. And this is like 2004. So it was probably our 30th and their 20th or something, but something like that. No, their 10th and our 20th. And, so her 30th. And she worked for Microsoft. She already had her own foundation and stuff. Lady was maybe 32 years old and was making, she had so much Microsoft stock, she had her own foundation. I mean, she's a brilliant girl. I mean, and the other lady was an accountant, a CPA. And one had played volleyball and one had played soccer. I mean, really pleasant. The one from Microsoft wasn't married, the other one was. Long story on that too that I shall not go into on the air. I got her whole life story, but anyway, they were, but Microsoft at one point, that was the single biggest expense on their balance sheet, was every year they would go out and buy stock in the open market and give it to employees. But that, now that's different, because now your basis is the market price, because they gave it to you, you know, if they gave you 100 shares of stock at the end of the year, well, Microsoft at the time was trading $35. So 100 shares times 35 is what, $3,500. So they give you that, but you got to pay tax on the $3,500, right? But people would get stock. People at Home Depot got stock. People, UPS got stock. I mean, a lot of companies used to do that. That was a single big. But now they went out. Those were not stock options.
Right.
That was actual stock. And when they gave you the stock, you paid income tax on the $3,500 because that was the going price today. So instead of giving you a $3,500 check, they gave you 100 shares of stock. Now that's kind of part A, all right. But now when you get a stock option, the company is they can be doing this either out of treasury stock, which I bet they are. I can't imagine that Tesla is going to go out and buy 22.8 million shares of stock in the open market and give it to this guy. They probably have been accumulating some treasury stock along the way. And when a company issues stock, all right, a first-time issue. They issue 100 million shares. So whatever reason, stock buyback, just in anticipation of giving bonuses, whatever it is, they can go out and buy stock in the open market, but that's considered treasury stock. So that goes in to a separate pool, okay? It's not, so they can go resell that in the open market again because it's treasury stock. They can't just put new issue stock out into the market because that would, you need a new issue. Like you need a board vote and all that kind of stuff. Treasury stock you can. So they could go out if they wanted to and accumulate this 22.8 million shares over a, knowing that Elon Musk, this is a 10 year deal. Okay, so they could have accumulated 2 million shares a year in anticipation of him exercising that option this year. So, you with me so far, both John and Matt?
Yeah.
So say they do. So now he issues, they could probably have a board thing and issue him new shares, which would now dilute the shares by 22.8. Okay, but if they give him the treasury stock, they're technically not diluting him. And I didn't read anything in this article about dilution, so I'm guessing they have treasury stock, but I don't know that for sure. The lady could just not have known what I was talking about and didn't put it in there. So all of a sudden, now this guy's got 22.8 million shares of stock at 6.25. So now his tax thing is going to say 22.8 million times 1160 minus 6. That's what he has to pay taxes on, ordinary income. And but now what I think has happened is because somebody, I mean, that, you couldn't do this in the market. Right now, if somebody either brought in to PTI or any other brokerage firm 100 shares of Tesla or wanted to buy 100 shares of Tesla, you could put up 50% and go buy the rest. Okay, it's called the initial margin. The stock could drop down, and we only call you up and say, hey, John, send us some more scratch, buddy, if it goes below 30%. So that's called the maintenance margin. And there was a big change after the 29 crash, because before then you had to match dollar for dollar. So if you bought a stock at 100, you sent us a check for 50, and went down to 99, I'd be calling you up, hey, Flanny, you deadbeat, send me a buck.
Right.
But you don't have to do that anymore until it gets below 30%. But somehow or another, they didn't say how much in this article, who he borrowed it from, Musk has now gone out and borrowed against this, you know, how many billion dollars it sits. Then I don't know if he put the money into Tesla or where he put it, it's his business. But he went to some bank and he said, okay, I've got these options that are worth, you know, X billion dollars, say $40 billion. By the way, would you loan me 10? And they say, okay, you know, because they don't think it's going to drop by, you know, whatever, some percentage. Well, now all of a sudden he's got the loan on it and he owes the taxes on it. So if the stock were to drop by half and he didn't pay, he now has to, well, if the stock drops by 70%, he's got to sell all of it just to pay his tax bill. And where does that leave the guy with the margin loan? Not so good. So
I don't think a bad decision to have gone to the banks.
Well, no. I mean, if he gets the stuff today, and say he borrowed stock's 1160, and he borrowed, you know, $500 per share, probably a little more than I would do because knowing the stock just went up that much. But say it's $200 per share. I mean, I don't know. Is this thing going to go below 200? I'd probably take that bet, right? If I was him, if I really needed the money for something else, or if I needed to put it in the company,
at one point. That's the chance he took. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if he put it in the company, he did pretty well on that one, right?
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure. Is the space company separate, or is it a part of the space company? Maybe put it in there. I don't know. I mean, I don't know the guy's finances, but I'm saying he now has a margin thing. So the idea of owing the taxes now has kind of doubled up because now he has a margin loan. So the people with the margin loan might be saying, hey, buddy, we want you to pay off that tax piece. Otherwise, you know, you got to pay off some of us because we're not willing to, whatever we lent you before, we're not comfortable knowing you have a $15 billion tax bill. So all this stuff could sort of be in play. The idea about him going to Twitter and getting a vote on this is such BS, it's scary. I mean, it's great PR, but
he doesn't have a choice. I mean,
he does.
I mean, but to turn it over and say, you know, he's going to lose, what the Twitter vote is going to determine anything. It's all just hippodroming, I think.
Well, I mean, it's a major league bet. I mean, if he says, hey, screw this, the stock's going to be 2,000 in 2 years, I'm not selling anything. Or at least I'll wait till the end of the year. Or here's the one that's worse. I'll borrow more because, say, his tax, right. at the, what the very most his tax is going to be, I don't know what he's doing. Say it's 30% or a third, which is the highest, pretty much the highest tax rate, right? If he says, I'm rolling the bones, and the stock goes from 1160 to 1500, okay, now he has to, well, if he sells it then, he's now has capital gains taxes and the part that goes up from today, correct? But it won't be long term if he sells it by the end of the year. The problem comes down is if it goes down, because now he's got capital losses against ordinary income, and you don't want to do that. So I would say for him not to sell it, but I mean at least maybe we learn more than we want to know about taxes today or what. So the question is, how are you going to get $2 billion worth of option income on some stock? Now, that should be what you should think. How do I get to be Elon Musk and have this problem?
Wouldn't we all like a problem? Yeah,
would we like a problem like this? You know, I don't know how much he. What I would probably do, Manny, as we talked about earlier, I would buy the puts, because I don't really want probably to unload 7 million shares of stock on day one the minute I get this. What if it's a down day or it's a crummy day or a crummy week? I wouldn't want to upset the market with that. I would buy the puts and I'd start leaking a little bit out. That would be me. So I'm not giving the guy investment, but I'm sure he's paying guys more than he would pay me, but he doesn't need me for that. But or maybe do half and half or something, because I don't know that you necessarily want to, get your exercise on a Thursday and Friday, you know, hit the market with a 22 million share market order. I mean, I don't know where that would take Tesla, but I bet he could find somebody. I mean, I'll ask you this: if you walked up to a Goldman Sachs or somebody, now I've got the stock this morning trading. Where are we exactly? I just have it here. I keep being able to find it. Oh, it's down 54 bucks, 11.67. I'll bet if he needed to do this like this Wednesday, that somebody would take his 22 million shares at, I'll pick a number out, 11.30 or something, 11.25. He'd probably get somebody to take it below market.
Sure.
But he's not going to get it. He's probably not going to get exact market price. So I would find a way to buy the puts either over the counter or on the exchange. I'd ladder them out, or maybe I'd buy in the money puts, and I'd ladder them out for the next 12 months, and every month I just let those go. I'd do a million shares worth for the next 22 months. Every month I just, if the puts were in the money, I just let them go. Let the stock go, let it exercise. Or I'd be assigned is really what it is. No, I would exercise if it's puts. So I would just do it that way. You know, there's a chance of it. So anyway, John, long story short, don't tell it, as they say.
One thing, I'll never be in this position anyway, Tom, so it's fun to play around with him.
Well, but a lot of people are. A lot of people are. I had clients that were. I mean, back when they'd have stock options. I don't know how many. Maybe you should know this. Maybe you should. But when Home Depot first opened on North Avenue, it's got to be how many years now? I mean, if you walked into some old duck in the electrical aisle, I mean, you're hoping the guy's helping you with a switch or a dimmer. I'm going to say that guy was a millionaire. If all the original people at Home Depot, wherever didn't they start at some southern state? I think all those people were retired millionaires because they got stock early on because the guy wasn't paying very much, and the good people he rewarded with stock, didn't he, John?
Right. I mean, that's the real push for these compensation packages with stock, because it's you know, you're playing with the future, and you can sell the idea that you've got a growth industry that's going to, you know, be. They're leading the pack for the next 20, 30 years. And in many cases, that is exactly what happens. It's a very attractive thing, and it's a very easy way to make a lot of money really fast. So it's a brilliant move, and, you know, it keeps you a stakeholder in the company in a way that, you know, it's worth more than maybe to the company in the long run than whatever they're paying you, because it's goodwill and it's publicity and everything else. So.
Well, I think that people in the Chicago area, people who retired and had put in, you know, 30, 35 years of UPS, they all retired with, matter of fact, I'm a new client this week, that has, maybe a couple that have a whole bunch of, UPS stock. But if you worked at UPS for 25, 30 years, I think you ended up with, you know, $1 million worth, not even in upper management. I mean, just maybe mid-management level. And I don't know if it was your 401k that was mostly a UPS stock, or if it was something different. I'm not exactly sure how it happened, because our back office people did the get the stock over here part, and I don't remember if it came out of a 401k or what it did, but I'm going to say virtually everybody in that genre of people or that era, million and a half dollars, it seemed to be the number right about there, John. This one, the stock was 80. So obviously the stock's 2-something now. So everybody had like a million and a half stock that was their retirement. Matter of fact,
You compare that and put on the other side of it, you know, the Enrons and the WorldComs and places like that, that your people took a total bath on. So a lot depends on the integrity of the people at the top and what really is going on. And there's been enough cases of doing end runs around disclosure or accurate accounting and everything else to make people kind of wonder, well, is this a good deal or not? So that's the real problem with things like Enron, is that it casts a poor light on otherwise perfectly okay arrangements with compensation. But when you don't have, when you have crooks at the top, of course all bets are off.
Well, I mean, some 401ks were really designed that way, or I'll say managed that way. You know, was one of the worst was Bear Stearns.
Yeah.
Because when I say this, just to go back some, if you have a retirement account at your place, all right, you can either have the old style at Pullman, which we had, which was a defined benefit plan, right? You were going to get X when you were 65, and you had a separate pension board that figured out, okay, here's the actual part of everybody, when they're all going to croak, and here's when... Here's our interest rate. So in order for everybody to have enough money this year, that year, and the next year, we have to contribute X percent per year. So Pullman had something like that. So did the airlines. So did virtually everybody. Steel companies. Well, now you find very few of those. There's probably a few that are holdover. But then they started running these 401k plans. And some companies, I'm not even sure. Boy, John, I never ran one of these. But some companies, the best stock that they put in there was their own company stock. So Bear Stearns, I think some huge percentage of the stock in their retirement plan was their own stock.
Yeah.
So when the place went under, not only you lost your job, you lost your retirement.
Lost your future. Yeah,
you lost. And so, matter of fact, I had when this group used to do these seminars back in the 90s, we were never, it was registered people. You never wanted to give seminars, John, because you could never advertise them, because when you advertise these things, people have to make all these claims that, of course, let's say they're not the best, right? But we would go and we would arrange the mock trading on the trading floor and the floor tours, and we'd give maybe an hour or two lecture regarding what a broker should do for you, and here's how your orders get stuff, and maybe we'd get somebody from the CBOE to give a talk. So we helped out, but it was never our seminar. We didn't have any money on it or anything like that. But you met someone else. You know what else we would do is the day everybody left, we'd bring them all over the Excelsior, get this big long table, and everybody start drinking Excelsior drinks and tell me their whole life story. But you heard we had some of those interesting people, right? From one guy who played for Darrell, a Texan who ended up, he was a helicopter pilot, and he would take his helicopter to work every day from his ranch to his office. Guy had nothing but dough. He was telling me that I played for Darrell. The guy never had his name pronounced right. Darrell Royal, if you're from Texas, Darrell. Anyway, he was telling me that he graduated, went to a pro football camp, was there like 2 days, and said, these guys are bigger and faster and they hit harder in college. I'm out of here. He goes back. He goes, everybody had a guy who took care of you, right? Getting money and pizzas and whatever and beer. So I called the guy. I go, I think I want to go to law school. The guy goes, you can't play football anymore. Why is that my problem? something along those lines. Hey, the world doesn't change much, does it? So anyway, there's another guy whose kid is his son or daughter goes to some place. This is the dot-bomb era. Goes to some place in a town. I don't know. It's probably like whatever the valley, the Silicon Valley or someplace. He goes, my kid just doesn't get it. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, he's working for this place. He's making good money. It's one of these new companies. He marries a girl from the place. Okay. Their retirement is all in their stuff. And oh, by the way, they got a beautiful new home. They paid a fortune for it in an area where like 80% of the people work at the same place. Because the guy has no idea of how concentrated he is after I just given a speech on concentrated stocks. He goes, if one goes down, they all go down. You can't even be divorced with the same lady working at the same place. And if you have to sell your house when half the place gets retired or gets fired on the same day, what are you going to get for your house? And oh, by the way, the place goes under, there goes your pension on top of it. He goes, I can't even talk to the kid. He thinks everything's fine. So, I mean, just saying. But it, and I think that company actually did pretty well, so the kid probably did do fine, but some didn't. You know, but you hear these stories and you see, I just like having an example like Musk, where everybody knows, and the numbers are big enough to get people's interest. Because there's a million questions in here on how to handle something like this, right?
Yeah, and to his credit, I mean, this turns it into a topic of discussion. Discussion, you know, among people who have no real interest in Tesla or him, but it sheds light on it and the problems that people in this, you know, segment of the population and the kind of risks somebody who's got that kind of investment has to face and how much tax he really will pay. I think all of this is good. I mean, there's something positive about having this seen and talked about and not just, you know, pretend that it isn't newsworthy or that it's not important information for people. So overall, even the Twitter vote is probably a plus overall in that it doesn't, you know, try to cover up anything or pretend that it's not of any consequence.
So what does it do for you that the producer of the show, Matty Weber, just sent him a tweet saying, I'll help you out, give me 1,000 of those? Matty, you can make do with just 1,000. Hey, you'd upgrade the car.
I think so.
I'll go for a lot less, Tom.
You wouldn't upgrade poor Venkman, wouldn't you? He'd still be okay? Matty, if the dog walk in and say, hey, buddy, get out of here. I need a pedigreed dog now. You're out.
I don't think so.
So Venkman would be like, hey, wait a minute. I've been your pal forever. Now I'm out. John, thank you very much. Talk to you later. No, SP Futures up 550. NASDAQ Futures up 1.25. By the way, John, are the Irish going to make it up? Everybody in front of them is falling apart. Michigan State,
yeah,
Wake Forest. Wisconsin,
my breath, Tom.
Minnesota too, boy. We have to talk to Joel tomorrow about this Big Ten, huh, Matty? We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. SP Futures up 575. NASDAQ Futures up 25 cents. Dow futures up 104. Individual side down. Caterpillar now is up 11.64. Manny, there's got to be some news on that that I haven't spotted here. If you wouldn't mind, when you're done with traffic, weather, sports, see if there is some. It's a big move. It's 5%. They're what's running the Dow. That's like 80 points in the Dow right there. McDonald's up 19 cents. We got J.P. Morgan up 79 cents. Merck
there's
down
stuff that came out over the weekend about selling their mining and oil and gas equipment businesses.
Really?
Yeah.
I
haven't read into it. I'm just looking at headlines.
Wasn't like Maddie Weber Inc. buying a bulldozer or anything like that.
No.
I mean, I could see you guys with all the stuff going on in your neighborhood. I could see you buying something like that and renting it out. Anyway, just saying, that's the kind of guy you are these days. Enterprising. DAX down 29.2%. FTSE down 7.1%. They were flat earlier. CAC-Iran up 16.2%. So pretty quiet over in Europe. Asia kind of quiet as well. Nikkei down 104.3%. Shanghai up 7.2%. Hang Seng down 106.4%. Bonds, this is what I've talked to Mike about here in a second, is I don't get this. They come out and say they're going to do this. The guy must have been absolutely not believed by anybody, because bonds are going exactly the opposite direction where you expect from what the Fed's official story was last week. 10-year 1.48. Remember, it got above 1.6. The bond was down to minus 0.08. Now it's back to minus 0.26, which, given the inflation rate over there, means the negative interest rate is dramatic in Europe. Japan down to 0.05, was up to 0.10. UK 0.86. Friday market up down 203. S&P up 17. NASDAQ up 31. Oil up 53 cents to 81.80. Brent up 54 cents, 83.28. Natural gas down 6 cents, 5.45. Arbob up a penny, 2.33. We've got gold now up 6.79 to 18.23. Gold took a real big move up on Friday. I mean, it looks like it's trying to double up here. Silver up 29 cents, 24.45. I kind of believe this silver that goes below above 25. It hasn't broken out of there at all. Copper up 3 cents, 4.37. We got crypto, big move in crypto, up $3,300, $65,850. So I don't believe a word the Fed said the other day after where the market's moving. Now, do you got for us traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Earlier crash on the Stevenson at Pulaski is all clear, so that's good news, but the Stevenson is pretty jammed up. We also had an earlier crash on the inbound Bishop Ford right near Stony Island, and that crash has been cleared as well. But slow-moving expressways across the board here. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are all showing a lot of red. Same for the Stevenson, especially on the outbound side because of that earlier crash. I-290 is a lot busier now than it was last hour, but no accidents to report. And then the Kennedy, there's some lane realignment that has the Kennedy really slowed down.
We saw that.
We did see that this morning, and that's going to be in effect for the next month or so, and people are going to have to get used to it. But right now, an hour from O'Hare into downtown due to that. Eden's looking okay. Out west in the suburbs, it's relatively quiet, although we do have a couple of crashes off the expressways. Looks like Irving Park Road at Medina Road, there was an accident. And then just west of there, we had an earlier crash, but apparently that's been cleared, so that's gone now. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, a beautiful fall day. Sunshine, a high of 64. Right now it's clear and 52 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 62. In sports, the Bears are on Monday Night Football tonight. They'll be in Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers. Bears are 3-5. The Steelers are 4-3. That is a 7:15 Chicago time kickoff. Arizona Cardinals are 8-1. They won without their quarterback and without their star wide receiver yesterday, beating San Francisco on the road 31-17. Sunday Night Football, it was the Titans upsetting the Rams 28-16. NHL hockey, Blackhawks earned their second win of the season. They beat the Predators in overtime 2-1. It was interim head coach Derek King's first win. The Bulls are back in action tonight at the United Center. 7 p.m. tip-off as the Brooklyn Nets come to town. Chief.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Chief. How you doing?
All right, are you, you 100% or close? Are you gaining on it?
I'm working at it. I'm at least done with the initial phases and getting better every day.
Good for you. Well, you sound good. Your spirits are up, so that's good. What do you make is I've really missed you for a couple of weeks with the kind of Fed doing its doing, and we're seeing now the numbers, I mean, all that's, I guess, really happened, if you believe them or don't, or you listen to me ranting and raving about how the job they're doing, have you ever seen a bigger split in what the, let's say, the party line is and what the market thinks the party line is?
It's absolutely amazing, and no, I haven't. This is a really, you know, it's kind of a coming to terms with where we actually stand in the market, and it feels like things are disjointed right now, and some of those correlations that we expect to see aren't there. And when you don't see those correlations, it gives kind of a nervous feel to the market. Now, looking at the market in general, it's doing really well. Like, you know, starting 2.5 weeks ago, we started moving higher, and we look back. I mean, this market is really strong to the upside. We're seeing that in volatility, but we're still seeing volatility staying above that 15 handle level. So we're, you know, we're at 16 something this morning, or 16.49 this morning. And, you know, even as great as the market gets, we still stay at this relatively, elevated volatility level, even given the good news of the market going higher. So it makes you kind of step back and say, there's definitely a bigger picture here, what's going on. And it just, to me, it just feels disjointed, and the correlations that we typically see between market and bonds, market and some safe havens like gold don't seem to be there. You know, our traditional assets that we might look to are not really reflective of what we're seeing in the market, at least it seems to me.
What, I think both of us, I mean, you ask me and I ask you, and we both ask Jeff, then we ask Russell, and it's, I mean, it's really, I guess how far can we go down this road? It's like, I don't know, I mean, I'm looking at the Fed balance sheet again, and they had a little bit of a blip the week before last, but now last week they're right back up at a new record. I guess I understand where they have a plan, and they're gonna, you know, they're gonna do this over a period of time, and you know, everybody has a plan, but it's hard for me to understand exactly why today you would call the New York Fed and say, buy me some more bonds. I mean, they're just
right.
You know, even if you and I might have a plan that we're gonna accumulate like lawn furniture or something over time, and all of a sudden we look out the backyard and it's kind of stuff, and you might say to the wife, you know what, why don't we don't need to buy a chair today, let's wait a little more. I mean, to me, they're sort of in this, are we doing it because we're doing it for somebody? Are we doing it because somebody's making money here? Or are we being controlled by someone? What exactly would cause them to call up and say, well, buy me $10 billion worth of bonds today? I mean, the market's been up, you know, seemingly 100 days in a row. It's not stopping. The interest rates are going away the other way. We're pushing, you know, by whatever inflation thing you have, 4.5%, 5.5% negative interest rates. Why do you have? Oh no, make sure we get our $10 billion today. Why? I'm not saying turn it around. I'm not saying change your policy, but can't we go a day without doing this?
Right. I mean, and that's a great question, because why do we have seemingly two things going on at the same time that should be mutually exclusive, and they're not. They're going on at the same time, and I think that's a great comparison. Why today should we step in there and buy $10 billion worth of bonds? What makes today so special? When you look at the bigger picture, nothing seems to be pointing to, you know, long bonds. It just, from a portfolio standpoint and from sort of an economic standpoint, the pieces don't really line up. So I don't really have a good answer to your question.
Well, I mean, you have, maybe they've thrown all the old formulas out when they don't give us the money supply numbers anymore. But if you say to yourself, I mean, at the very basics, Mike, and I think you and I, even over from kind of different eras in school, I think we kind of learned some of the same stuff. When you lend somebody some money, you want a real rate of interest, and oh, by the way, if the whatever you borrowed the money in would be worth less at the end of the year, the other guy's supposed to cover that too, or the other person, right? So now, right now today, you know that you've got an interest rate, or you've got a, inflation rate of pick a number, 5%, 6. Now they can say it's temporary all they want, but they don't know that. So let's cut it back and say it's 3.5 or 4. Okay, let's give these guys a break and say they might be right with it's half transitory. Right, so what possesses you to print enough money to drive your 10-year rate down to 1.5 when you know it ought to be a minimum of 4? What's the damage in letting it go to 2, for God's sake, or 1.7? You're so far away from what any kind of reasonable investment is. I mean, in Europe, we've got the rates going more negative, and their inflation rate's higher than ours. I mean, when that central bank meets, don't they... They must know that it's going to take more and more money every single month you have to print to keep it going there, because they're fighting the market. Even though, you know, they're big enough to fight anybody in the market, it's still tough even for a Fed or a central bank to fight the market, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, that really shouldn't be what the Fed's doing, but it does appear that way. The fact of the matter is, when you have a market going one direction and you have things that need to be digested within the economy to just level out things, you know, you have this inflation level. I don't see why the Fed is, trying everything in their power to make this go away. It's not, I don't see how it goes away or improves with what their current strategy is, and to say it's not a problem is, I think, not forward thinking. When you look at the numbers, things are just too big at this point to continue, you know, indefinitely.
Well, I'll give you an example. I went. We had some workers over this weekend and trying to get stuff done for the winter, and so I don't know if anybody really cares, but I mean, this weekend it was. All the windows that we haven't replaced, my guys came by and, you know, got the big ladders, and we went around and made sure all the outside of them were caulked and everything, which hadn't been done in like 80 years. So we went through, you know, a couple of cases. I'm going to say, Mike, that if I went through my receipts going back, you know, the 10, 15 years I've been kind of doing this, I'm going to say you can't buy a decent tube of caulk now for less than $7. I'm going to say that, where are we, 2021? I'm going to say in 2018, mm-hmm. that number was $4.50, maybe $4.25, maybe $5 or something. But it's easily up 25-30% in 2 years.
Right.
You know, and for people to be in constant denial that this is happening, and you know, what is the point of lying to people? Do we think, maybe, you know, I guess this is an old guy talking, but I'm tired of being considered stupid by people that I pay their salary. Is it just me?
No, I think the feeling is mutual by many investors. I think there's a lot of frustration out there in trying to decipher what exactly, or even just put the pieces together where you can get some semblance of economic sense. There seems to be a major disconnect, and that disconnect, as hard as it is to believe, I mean, we've been talking to Chief about this for a while now, and we see the same thing happen over and over again. It doesn't seem that day of reckoning hasn't really happened yet, or even, not even a day of reckoning, just sort of a normalization different assets. We haven't seen that normalization.
Well, I would probably be the biggest, and if you were with me, I think you'd be the same way. If we thought for a second that everything that we'd come through a horrendous recession or something, and we, you know, we had a position where the money supply had dropped or something like that, and we thought really everything was, you know, we had companies that were trading for 5x earnings that were good companies, and we just had this, some horrible thing had happened, and now we're on the Fed and we're trying to prop things back up. Would I try and get the money supply or the money system back up to where it probably should have been if it wasn't for whatever happening? Would I hope for your vote if I was the chairman to say, let's do a little something out of the box here and you know, we shouldn't be in the market. But by the way, you know, Matty Weber's company shouldn't be trading for 5x earnings either. The only reason why it is because this happened and we let the monetary base drop. I could vote for that in a second. You know, just hope we didn't go overboard on it. Yeah, but right now you've got a boatload of stocks. Somebody on CNBC yesterday rattled off names about 10 of them. It was like Snap and a bunch of these other places that, you know, that
yep.
I mean, it's, I don't want to list the rest because A, I don't remember, and B, I don't want to sound like I'm giving any kind of, he basically listed 10 stocks that like, what are these things even doing here? I mean, he's rattled off the average of, how many times earnings and, I mean, is it really necessary to drive a stock that's 100 times earnings to 110 times earnings? I mean, are you accomplishing a good there or a bad? I guess if you know the day you're going to turn the bus around and you're going to tell 15 people to get out at the top, I guess it's good for those 15 people. But just in general, what exactly are you accomplishing? You know, I mean,
you're setting yourself up for, what we would traditionally probably call like, a crash in the market. When you have things disjointed and you have, levels that are just so far above rational trading sense, I think, you know, you open the door for these major outlier moves. And, those can happen at any point. The market is this probability game, and we're always trying to avoid those black swan events, but we know they happen. And part of the reason for that is when things do get so out of line, there is sort of a day everyone wakes up and realizes it's out of line, and everyone wants out at the same time.
Well, Mike, you have right now, the way I'm looking at it, I'm going to ask you because you're closer to this these days than I am. When they come out with a 10-year, and on the last auction, you know, they claim wasn't the best, whatever the hell that means. But still, it came out at whatever, 1 point, where's the 10-year today? The TNX is 1.48, right, is what I have. All right, so there's obviously people buying bonds at this level. Now, I know that, and please add to the list here, I'm asking the question, that some insurance companies just have to have, you know, in their charter or whatever their directions are, wherever they come from, they have to have a certain amount of treasuries. So they're a buyer no matter what, right? I mean, they may not want to, but
right.
they're a buyer no matter what. The federal government just printed a bunch of dough and sent it out to states and cities. That's why Chicago is not going bankrupt like tomorrow, right? So when I helped out the state treasurer run for the office and we wrote this booklet about what she was going to do differently, and there's not much you can do differently, but basically the state treasurer, if they have any excess cash, they have to invest in U.S. treasuries or they got to put it in a bank that's insured. I think it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so obviously that money that you sent to states and cities, some of it's going to come back at you if it's not going to be spent tomorrow, right? And then you have the Fed buying. Now, so you have those sorts of buyers. You might actually have some buyers from overseas. I mean, I have to believe that,
right.
You know, the Saudis are going to be a buyer of our stuff no matter what. They're not going to be happy with the 1.6%. Or maybe they're going lower to 5-year and 2-year. Who the hell knows? But the point is you have natural buyers of this. And you also have a tremendous amount of buying coming out of the Fed. But if you take the Fed out of the mix, I mean, you're not going to get, I mean, who else is going to be a buyer of 10 years at 1.5%? I mean, you're not going to be. I'm not going to be.
No, absolutely not. Yeah,
I mean, at some point, where do you get to the spot where the rest of the people say, "Nah, I want like 5%, not one." I mean, right now, the Fed and the place they've sent the money to, and the people that have these regulations, are essentially they're a big enough part of the market to keep it at sort of the wrong price. I mean, it seems to me, but I don't know. I mean, I'm stunned they made it this far, but. What's the limit on this? Is it another 10 years, another 10 days, another 20 years? I mean, that's the part I have problems. I can't figure out the date, Mike, or if there's even going to be a date anywhere in the next 10 years.
I mean, I can't either, to be completely honest. It's hard to say how long. We've never seen this type of action before in the market or these types of setups before. A lot of the ways that we traditionally looked at the market just don't add up. You know, none of the pieces really add up right now. And so we're trying to look at the market in a new way. And it's a really odd thing, you know, being so high in the market and still carrying excess volatility. You know, you can paint a real picture about what's going on with the overall economy just by looking at the market and volatility and looking at what that story is telling you. And to me, it's painting a picture of risk still there and the market still expecting expecting movement one way or the other, but it's expecting, a 16% move in the market, you know, if you annualize it over the next year. That's still a major amount of movement for trading an asset, the market, that's so high at these levels anyways. And I say they're so high is because, you know, we're making all-time new highs.
Every day, virtually.
Absolutely.
And I guess if it ever does happen, you and I will be grousing about why we didn't know it was that day.
Yeah, and why my positions are the way they are.
Well, you know, I was going to ask because you've had some time to research this stuff, unfortunately. What I heard last week, there was one article about the second biggest property owner over in China. I think they were the second biggest, was going to miss a payment either last week or this week under Evergrande. How did those stories just drop off the? Drop off the scene? Evergrande made their one payment. Does that mean they're all good
right
now, or what? The deal they had where somebody's going to buy part of them fell apart, right?
There was something like that, but you're right. You know, it sort of lost its influence in the market, and it was overshadowed by the market moving higher and disregarding the storylines as anything that's going to make them go down. So, you know, just a higher market, I think, brought lost value, you took the spotlight off of those types of headlines in the Chinese debt.
Well, plus I did read that China has, if they had to bail them, they could because they got a whole bunch of currency reserves. So they probably wouldn't let.
I read that too. Yeah.
So I honestly can't put my finger on what would cause the apple cart to turn over here. I mean, it seems like. The margin loans are, there's $150 billion more margin loans at the beginning of the year, 10 months. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean yep. every day we go up, the place is awash in more money, right? I mean,
That's absolutely correct. I mean, and the same thing is repeating itself, and the scale of it is just increasing and increasing.
Well, every time the market goes up by $1 trillion in value, you gain $500 billion in buying power, right? Even if nobody puts another dollar in from anywhere else.
That's a good way to look at it, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's true, right? I mean, you're essentially manufacturing your own, not only your own wealth, but you're and a lot of it's legit. I mean, if companies are making money, it should go up. But, essentially, if we went up 10% this week, you know, who knows? It goes up every day. We might. We would end up with, you know, the market value would be up 10%, so the buying power of all the accounts in the country just went up 50% without having to send another nickel into their broker, correct?
Correct, yep.
And to the extent that Bitcoin is becoming marginable, which I guess in a few spots it is, right, or people are willing to borrow money, lend money to you on Bitcoin, every day it goes up.
It's becoming, yep.
You multiply your wealth, you know, pretty much every day, correct?
That is the general normalcy that we are seeing. Yeah.
The system is enough to where you should be made nervous when things are going too good, just as much as you're nervous when things aren't going good, just because of the way the system is, because the ability for it to contract very rapidly is always underestimated.
Exactly.
I mean. I don't know. You think that the guy here with the $45 million worth of November calls in the VIX, has he got any chance? He's only got 2 weeks.
Right, and, you know, hard to say. And he may, you know, what? Where was his strike again?
He paid $5 for the 20s, and we're trading 16 and a half, so he needs a move.
He needs a move, and, you know, it doesn't take much to see volatility spike in this market, so I think he still has a chance. But, you know, as far as where I'd like to be positioned, I can't reasonably say get long this market at these levels. I don't have a reason to get long other than that's the general trend that we've been seeing. So, you know, if anything, I'd be a seller of this market, and I think, you know, volatility, I would expect to see that higher. And I'm going to stick to that sort of area until I've been proven really wrong.
Well, I got some buried calls for some people, and I've been putting diagonals on top of everything, so I'm participating a little bit in more in the upside than the dead zero. But, man, oh, man, I was careful of being out of the money in strikes 2 weeks ago. We're up 15 strikes in some of these things.
I mean, when you look at the action over the past 2 weeks, that's it's definitely a trading trap.
Oh yeah,
and it's if you're on the wrong side of that move, there's really very little you can do.
Well, Mike, we'll talk to you next week or maybe sooner. Hope you're jagging soon, buddy. SP futures up 9, NASDAQ futures up 3. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Hey guys, what's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
A little early. I
gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.